The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle, based on the original story by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Jem?
You told me you'd give me one for Christmas, Maggie. I'm just feeling which one is the fattest.
We've set yours aside for you. Jem's bird, we call it. It's the big white one over yonder. There's 26 of them, which makes one for you, and one for us, and 2 dozen for the market.
Well, thank you, Maggie, but if it's all the same to you, I'd rather have the one I was handling just now.
The yarn is a good £3 heavier. We found it expressly for you.
Never mind about that, Maggie. I'd rather have the other. I'll take it off you right now, if
just
I may.
Just as you like, brother. Which is it you want, then?
That one with the barred tail. Right there in the middle of the flock.
Oh, very well. Kill it and take it with you.
What are you doing back so soon, Jem? I was just going in for my supper.
Where have they all gone, Maggie?
The geese? Well, they've gone to the dealer's, Jem. Why?
But there was another one, with a barred tail, aside from that one that I chose.
Oh, aye, Jem. The twins, I used to call them. I never could tell them apart.
Oh, no!
It is alleged that you, John Horner, plumber at the Hotel Cosmopolitan, are charged with the theft of a valuable gemstone, known as the Blue Carbuncle, from the room of the Countess of Morcar. You were seen by the upper attendant, Mr. James Ryder, entering the room of the Countess shortly before the theft occurred. It is also alleged that you assaulted the arresting officer, Inspector Bradstreet. In view of the gravity of these charges and your previous conviction for robbery, I'm remanding you in custody until a date can be fixed for you to answer for these offences. Revive Mr. Horner and take him to the cells. Next case.
Night, Peterson. Merry Christmas to you and Mrs. Peterson.
And to you, Harris. Oh, we all want some figgy pudding. Oh, we all want some figgy pudding. Oh, we all want some figgy pudding. So, bring it out here.
Help! Help!
Hi, you there. Excuse me, sir. You've dropped your hat and your goose. Sir?
Mr. Holmes, it's Dr. Watson come to pay us a visit.
Show him in, Mrs. Hudson, do. What's this, Watson? Standing on ceremony and waiting to be announced? You may be married, but you may always consider Baker Street your home, you know.
Compliments of the season, my dear Holmes. You look busy, am I interrupting you?
Not at all. The matter is a perfectly trivial one, but it's not entirely devoid of interest. Take a look at this.
Do you mean to tell me that this rather shabby-looking hat is the clue to the solution of some mystery? The punishment of some deadly crime?
No crime. Only one of those little incidents that will happen when you have 4 million human beings all jostling each other within the space of a few square miles. Amid the action and reaction of so dense a swarm of humanity, every possible combination of events must eventually take place. And there are plenty of little problems that are striking and bizarre without being criminal. You know Peterson, the commissionaire?
Yes.
It is to him that this trophy belongs.
This monstrosity is Peterson's hat?
No. He found it. It arrived upon Christmas morning, in company with a good fat goose, which is, I have no doubt, roasting at this moment in front of Peterson's fire. The facts are these. About 4 o'clock on Christmas morning, Peterson was returning from some small jollification and was making his way homeward down Tottenham Court Road. As he reached the corner of Goodge Street, a row broke out between a tallish man, walking with a slight stagger and carrying a white goose slung over his shoulders, and a little knot of roughs. One of the latter knocked off the man's hat, upon which he raised his stick to defend himself, and swinging it over his head, accidentally smashed the shop window behind him. Peterson had rushed forward to protect the stranger from his assailants, but the man, shocked at having broken the window and seeing an official-looking person in uniform rushing towards him, dropped his goose, took to his heels, and vanished. The roughs had also fled, so Peterson was left in possession of the field of battle, and also of the spoils of victory, in the shape of this battered hat and a most unimpeachable Christmas goose.
Which surely he restored to their owner?
My dear fellow, therein lies the problem. For Mrs. Henry Baker was printed upon a small card which was tied to the bird's left leg, and the initials HB are legible upon the lining of this dreadful hat. But as there are some hundreds of Henry Bakers in this city of ours, it is not easy to restore lost property to any one of them.
So what did Peterson do?
He brought round both hat and goose to me on Christmas morning, knowing that even the smallest problems interest me. The goose we had kept until this morning, when there were signs that despite the frost, it would be well that it should be eaten without further delay. Its finder has carried it off to fulfil the ultimate destiny of a goose, while I retained the hat of the unknown gentleman who lost his Christmas dinner. I beg that you will look on this not as a battered billycock, but as an intellectual problem.
But you are joking. What can you gather from this old battered felt?
Here is my lens. You know my methods. What can you gather as to the identity of the man who has worn this article?
It's a very ordinary type of a hat, and much the worse for wear. The lining is red silk, but badly discoloured. Pierced in the brim for a hat securer, but the elastic is missing. Otherwise it's just a cracked, exceedingly dusty, ink-spotted and rather ugly hat. I'm afraid I can see nothing more.
On the contrary, Watson, you can see everything. You fail, however, to reason from what you see. You are too timid in drawing your inferences.
Then pray tell me what it is that you can infer from this hat.
It is perhaps less suggestive than it might have been, and yet there are a few inferences which are very distinct. It is obvious, on the face of it, that the man was fairly well-to-do within the last 3 years, and has fallen upon evil days recently. He had foresight, but has less now than formerly, pointing to a moral retrogression, which, when taken with the decline of his fortunes, seems to indicate some evil influence, probably drink, at work upon him. This may account also for the obvious fact that his wife has ceased to love him.
You are certainly joking, Holmes.
Not in the least. Is it possible that even now, when I give you these results, you are unable to see how they are attained?
I have no doubt I am very stupid, but I must confess I am unable to follow you. For example, how did you deduce the decline in the man's fortunes?
This hat is 3 years old. These flat brims curled at the edge came in fashion then. It is a hat of the very best quality. Look at the band of ribbed silk and the excellent lining. If this man could afford to buy so expensive a hat 3 years ago, and has had no new hat since, then he has assuredly gone down in the world.
Well, that's clear enough, certainly. But how about the foresight and the moral retrogression?
Here is the foresight. This little device here, the hat securer. Hats are never sold with them already affixed, so if this man ordered one, it is a sign of a certain amount of foresight. But as we see that he has since broken the elastic and not troubled to replace it, it is obvious that he has less foresight now than formerly. On the other hand, he has endeavoured to conceal some of these stains upon the felt by daubing them with ink, which is a sign that he has not entirely lost his self-respect.
Your reasoning is certainly plausible. But his wife? You said that she had ceased to love him.
This hat has not been brushed for weeks. When I see you, my dear Watson, with a week's accumulation of dust upon your hat, and when your wife allows you to go out in such a state, I shall fear that you also have been unfortunate enough to lose your wife's affection.
You have an answer to everything. But since there's been no crime committed and no harm done, save the loss of a goose, all this seems to be rather a waste of energy.
Well, since you...
Goose, Mr. Holmes, the goose, sir.
What of it, Peterson? Has it returned to life and flapped off through the kitchen window?
See here, sir. See what my wife found in its crop.
By Jove, Peterson, this is treasure trove indeed. I suppose you know what you have got.
Not the Countess of Morker's blue carbuncle.
Precisely so. I ought to know its size and shape, seeing that I have read the advertisement about it in the Times every day lately. The reward offered of £1,000 is certainly not within a 20th part of the market price.
£1,000? Great Lord of mercy!
Quite. It's a bonny thing. Look how it glints and sparkles. Of course, it is a nucleus and focus of crime, every good stone is. In some jewels, every facet may stand for a bloody deed. This stone is not yet 20 years old, but in spite of its youth, it has already a sinister history. There have been 2 murders, a vitriol throwing, a suicide, and several robberies brought about for the sake of this 40-grain weight of crystallized charcoal. I'll lock it up in my strong box for now and drop a line to the Countess to say that we have it.
If I remember right, it is one John Horner, the hotel plumber, who is currently awaiting trial for the theft. Do you think this man Baker was his accomplice?
My dear Watson, I'm not even sure that Horner should be on trial. But I am fairly certain that Henry Baker is an innocent man who had no idea that the bird he was carrying was of more value than if it were made of solid gold. That, however, I shall determine by a very simple test if we have an answer to our advertisement. Give me a pencil and that slip of paper. Now then, found at the corner of Googe Street a goose and a black felt hat. Mr. Henry Baker can have the same by applying at 6:30 this evening at 221B Baker Street. Here you are, Peterson. Run down to the advertising agency and have this put in the evening papers. And you'd better fetch me another goose to give to this gentleman in place of the one that your family is now devouring.
Right-o, sir.
You see, Watson, our little deductions have suddenly assumed a much more important and less innocent aspect. Here is the stone came from the goose, and the goose came from Mr. Henry Baker, the gentleman with the bad hat and all the other characteristics with which I have bored you. So now we must wait for this gentleman and ascertain what part he has played in this little mystery.
Then we can do nothing until this evening.
Quite so. What say you continue your rounds and join me here at 6:30 for dinner?
It's Dr. Watson here to see us again. And there's a gentleman with him wearing a very strange hat, if I do take the liberty of saying so. It's one of those queer things Scotsmen wear. Can you imagine?
If you'll be good enough to show him in, Mrs. Hudson, I shan't have to imagine. You know that Dr. Watson is dining with me tonight?
Oh, yes. I've laid on a nice pheasant for you both.
Splendid. Perhaps in view of recent events, you ought to examine its crop. Show in my visitors, would you?
As you like, Mr. Holmes. This way, please. Shall I take your hats, Dr. Watson? Sir?
Ah, Watson. And Mr. Baker, I presume. Do take a seat here by the fire. Now, is this yours?
Why, yes, sir. That is undoubtedly my hat. I am much indebted to you, sir, for that Scotch bonnet was fitted neither to my years nor my gravity.
We kept your goose and hat for some days. I am at a loss to know now why you did not advertise giving your address. Oh,
well, shillings have not been so plentiful with me as they once were. I had no doubt that the gang who assaulted me had carried off both hat and bird. I didn't care to spend more money in a hopeless attempt to recover them.
Naturally. By the way, about the bird, we were compelled to eat it.
To eat it?
Now, Mr. Baker. After so many days, it would have been of no use to anyone had we not done so.
I presume that this other goose upon the sideboard will answer your purposes equally well.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
Of course, we still have the feathers, legs, crop, and so on of your own bird, so if you wish...
They might be useful to me as mementos of my adventure, but beyond that, I can hardly see what use the disjecta membra of my late acquaintance are going to be to me. Good gracious, no, sir. I think that, with your permission, I will confine my attentions to this excellent bird upon the sideboard.
Very well. Here is your hat, then. And there your bird. Oh, by the way, would it bore you to tell me where you got the other one from? I have seldom seen a better grown goose.
Oh, certainly, sir. There are a few of us who frequent the Alpha Inn, near the museum. This year our good host instituted a goose club, by which, in return for some few pence every week, we were each to receive a bird at Christmas.
And does he raise the birds himself?
Ah, no, now you mention it. The birds came from Ma Breckenridge, down at Covent Garden.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Most informative. Now I bid you good night.
Good night, sir. I'm most indebted to you.
So much for Mr. Henry Baker. It is quite certain that he knows nothing whatever about the matter. Are you hungry, Watson?
Not particularly.
Then I suggest we make our dinner into a supper and follow up this clue while it is still hot. Remember, Watson, that though we have so homely a thing as a goose at one end of this chain, we have at the other a man who will certainly get 7 years penal servitude unless we can establish his innocence.
We might just as likely confirm his guilt.
Ah, Watson, you're quite right, of course. Facts before theories, always. But we have a line of investigation which has been missed by the police, and which a singular chance has placed in our hands. Let us follow it out to the bitter end. Faces to the south, then, and quick march! Good evening. It's a cold night, isn't it? Sold out of geese, I see.
Let you have 500 tomorrow morning.
Well, that's no good.
Well, there are some on the stall with a gas flare.
But I was recommended to you.
Who by?
The landlord of the Alpha.
Oh, aye. I sent him a couple of dozen.
Fine birds they were, too. Where did you get them from?
Now then, mister, what are you driving at? Let's have it straight now.
It is straight enough. I should like to know who sold you the geese which you supplied to the Alpha.
Well, then I shan't tell you, so now.
No, it's a matter of no importance. But I don't know why you should get so warm over such a trifle.
Warm? You'd be as warm, maybe, if you were as pestered as I am. When I pay good money for a good article, there should be an end of the business. But it's all, where are the geese? And who did you sell the geese to? And what will you take for the geese? One would think they were the only geese in the world to hear the fuss that's made over them.
Well, I have no connection with any other people who have been making inquiries. Ah, well, if you won't tell us, the bet is off, that is all. But I'm always ready to back my opinion on a matter of fowls, and I have a fiver on it that the bird I ate is country bred.
Well, then, you've lost your fiver, for it's town bred.
It is nothing of the kind.
I say it is.
I don't believe it.
Do you think you know more about fowls than I? I've handled them ever since I was a nipper. I tell you, all those birds that went to the Alpha were town bred.
You'll never persuade me to believe that.
Will you bet then?
Oh, it's merely taking your money, for I know that I am right. But I'll have a sovereign on with you, just to teach you not to be obstinate.
Ha ha! Bring me the books, Bill. Now then, Mr. Cockshaw, you see this little book?
Well?
Now, look at that third name. Just read it out to me.
December 22nd, 24 geese, sold to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha at 12 shillings, supplied by Mrs. Oakshot, 117 Brixton Road.
What have you to say now?
Here, take your sovereign.
Looks like I had one silly goose left in my shop after all.
Holmes, my good man, surely she's lying. If you'll allow me to return, I'm sure I can get the truth.
Thank you, Watson. I know you have a particularly effective manner with women, but I assure you it's not necessary. She was telling the absolute truth.
But surely you don't mean that you were...
Wrong? Of course not. But when you see a woman wearing shoes of that type and a copy of the Pinken protruding out of her apron, you can always draw her by a bet. I dare say that if I had put £100 down in front of her, that woman would not have given me such complete information as was drawn from her by the idea that she was doing me on a wager.
Well, Holmes, that was quite the stroke of ingenuity. But it's clear there are others beside ourselves who are anxious about the matter. Perhaps we should go to the Brixton Road immediately.
I've had enough of you and your geese. I wish you were all at the devil together. If you come pestering me any more with your silly talk, I'll set the dog at you. You bring Mrs. Oakshot here and I'll answer her. But what have you to do with it? Did I buy the geese off you?
No, but one of them was mine all the same.
Well, then ask Mrs. Oakshot for it.
She told me to ask you.
It seems that the Brixton Road has come to us. Sir! Sir!
Who are you then? What do you want?
You will excuse us, but I could not help overhearing your conversation just now. I think that I could be of assistance to you.
You? Who are you? How could you know anything about the matter?
My name is Sherlock Holmes. It is my business to know what other people don't know.
But you can know nothing of this.
Excuse me, but I know everything of it. You are endeavouring to trace some geese which were sold by Mrs. Oakshot of Brixton Road to a stallholder named Breckenridge, by her in turn to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha, and by him to his club, of which Mr. Henry Baker is a member.
Oh, sir, then you are the very man that I've longed to meet.
Pray tell me, before we go farther, who it is that I have the pleasure of assisting?
My name is John Robinson.
No, no, the real name. It is always awkward doing business with an alias.
I meant nothing by it. My real name is James Ryder.
Precisely so. Head attendant at the Hotel Cosmopolitan, and you want to know what became of those geese?
Yes, sir.
Or rather, I fancy, of that goose. It was one bird, I imagine, in which you were interested. White, with a black bar across the tail.
Oh, sir, can you tell me where it went?
It came to my rooms.
To you?
Yes, and a most remarkable bird it proved. I don't wonder that you should take an interest in it. It laid an egg after it was dead. The bonniest, brightest little blue egg that ever was seen.
Oh, no!
The game's up, Ryder. Hold up, man, or you'll be on the cobbles. Give him a dash of brandy from your flask, Watson. He's not got blood enough to go in for felony with impunity. So, now he looks a little more human. What a shrimp he is, to be sure.
But how?
I have almost every link in my hands and all the proofs which I could possibly need, so there is little which you need tell me. Still, that little may as well be cleared up to make the case complete. You had heard of this fantastic stone. The temptation of sudden wealth was too much for you. You knew that Horner the plumber had a previous brush with the law, and that suspicion would rest the more readily upon him. What did you do then? You made some small job in the Countess's room and managed that he should be the man sent for. Then, when he had left, you rifled the jewel case, raised the alarm, and had this unfortunate man arrested. You then...
For God's sake, have mercy! Think of my father, of my mother! It will break their hearts! I never went wrong before. I never will again. I swear it. I'll swear it on a Bible. Oh, don't bring it into court. For Christ's sake, don't.
Stand up, man. It is very well to cringe and crawl now. But you thought little enough of this poor Horner in the dock for a crime of which he knew nothing.
I will fly, Mr. Holmes. I'll leave the country, sir. And then the charge against him will break down.
We'll talk about that. And now let us hear a true account of the next act. How came the stone into the goose, and how came the goose into the open market? Tell us the truth, for there lies your only hope of safety.
I will tell you just as it happened, sir. When Horner had been arrested, it seemed to me that it would be best for me to get away with the stone at once. I went out, as if on some commission, and I made for me sister's house, where she fattens fowls for the market. All the way there, every man I met seemed to be a policeman or a detective, and for all that it was a cold night, the sweat was pouring down me face before I came to the Brixton Road. My sister asked me what was the matter, and why I was so pale. But I told her that I'd been upset by the jewel robbery at the hotel. Then I went into the backyard and smoked a pipe and wondered what it'd be best to do. I thought of all the agonies I'd gone through in coming from the hotel. I might at any moment be seized and searched, and there would be the stone in me waistcoat pocket. I was leaning against the wall at the time and looking at the geese which were waddling around my feet, and suddenly an idea came into my head, which showed me how I could beat the best detective that ever lived.
I see it all now. You thrust the stone down the neck of one of the birds, first choosing one with some identifying marking, the barred tail, of course, not knowing there were two alike. When you claimed your bird and discovered the stone gone, there was nothing for it but to try to trace its twin.
My sister thinks I'm going mad. Sometimes I think that I am myself, and now I am a branded thief, without ever having touched the wealth for which I sold me character. God help me! God help me!
Go!
What, sir? Oh, heaven bless you, sir!
No more words, just go.
Oh, thank you, sir! Thank you!
A most satisfactory conclusion. If Ryder will not appear against him, then the case against Horner must collapse. The Countess will get her stone, Peterson the reward, and Baker has his hat.
But what of Ryder, Holmes?
I am not retained by the police to supply their deficiencies. I suppose that I am commuting a felony, but it is just possible that I am saving a soul. That fellow will not go wrong again. He is too terribly frightened. But send him to jail now, and you make him a jailbird for life. Besides, it is the season of forgiveness. Chance has put in our way a most singular and whimsical problem, and its solution is its own reward. As for our reward, Mrs. Hudson has laid in a pheasant for supper. Will you join me?
With great pleasure.
Then let's return to Baker Street, where we will begin another investigation in which a bird will also be the chief feature.
That was The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle, based on the original story by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Adapted for audio play by Emma Byrne, starring Nigel Williams as Sherlock Holmes, Sean McMullen as Dr. Watson, Moira Kane as Mrs. Hudson, Kevin Healy as James Ryder, Susan Hodgetts as Maggie Oakshott, James McKendrick as Peterson, Steve Simler as Harris, Susan Small as Ma Breckenridge, Keith Waite as the Magistrate, and introducing Chris Watkins as Baker. The Baker Street Irregulars Choir was played by the 5th High Barnet Brownie Pack, with Johnny McKenzie and Tony Gray. Sound equipment by Dan Carey. Sound design by David Harvey and Paul Dawley. Technical advisor, Paul Lennon. The producer was Kathy Neeson and the director, Emma Byrne. This was a Network Theatre production. www.networktheatre.org